I re-upped my Netflix subscription today and I just finished watching the first of the 6 new episodes of Unsolved Mysteries, The Case of Jack Wheeler. Let's talk about it. You'll have to forgive me, I'm fighting a head cold right now, so if you hear any sniffles or loud breathing, well, I'm doing what I can. Also, I know that the last time I did an episode, I promised that I would come back and tell you about how studying the case of the Long Island serial killer almost ended my research into true crime. Well, I sat down to record it, and it turns out that the story is not very long, and it might not be interesting to anybody but me. I may still do that as a bonus episode, but instead, after watching this episode, I wanted to talk about this, and I wanted to talk about it now while it's still fresh in my head. I literally just finished watching it an hour ago. I'm just going to take a blind shot at this right now and say that if you're the kind of person that listens to true crime podcasts, that you were probably a fan of the original Unsolved Mysteries. I know I was. So when I heard they were bringing it back, that Netflix was going to bring back the brand, I got very excited. I got so excited that the first day that all 6 episodes were available, I sat down and I watched them all. I just went through all 6 of them. And I have to say, I was so-so on them. I thought the cases were interesting, but I don't know, maybe I was expecting more of the pacing and the feel of the old show, but I found myself kind of getting bored in some of those initial 6 episodes. I don't know if anything has changed in the way that they did it, or if it's just me that's changed, that I have different expectations going in now. I'm not expecting this to be the Bob Stack Unsolved Mysteries. This is the new version of Unsolved Mysteries. This is the way things work. But because of that, or because of all of that, the pacing in this first episode was really good for me. I was in, and I didn't drift at all. I was in the whole time, engaged the whole episode. So I hope you have watched it before going any further in this episode. I'm going to warn you, it might not make sense if you haven't seen it, because I'm not going to recap an hour-long TV show. I'm just going to talk about some of the interesting parts. I'm going to pull out the questions that I had while watching it. And I'm going to do it in the order that I watched the show, because the notes that I have, I did them in stream of consciousness while watching the show. And you'll notice that I make some assumptions in the beginning of this conversation that don't play out later, because there are assumptions that I make that aren't true. And I think a lot of the assumptions that I made were coming from that initial understanding of the beginning of the episode, where they say that Jack Wheeler was murdered. This seems like a very definitive statement that he was murdered. So as I'm going through and I'm seeing events, I'm assuming like, oh, this happens. This must have been the thing that happened right before the murder. But this actually, there's a string of very strange things that happen here that don't lead to his murder. They lead to another strange thing and another strange thing. And I think that's what makes the case so engaging. For example, so we have the scene in his house. This neighbor who says he's a very good neighbor. He goes into the house and he finds the Comet, the cleanser, you know, this white powdery cleanser spilled all over the floor in the kitchen. We see photos of this from the actual crime scene. There's a bear footprint, or maybe multiple bear footprints, going through this Comet on the floor. There's spices kind of on the table and some on the counter. There's little bottled spices. There's something in the sink, and then on top of that something, there's just a plate. It's broken, this brown taupe-colored plate. And all of this, it seemed at the time to me to indicate that he was in the kitchen doing something. You know, maybe he's in his pajamas, he's standing there in his feet, he's washing something, and someone interrupts him. And he drops a plate, and things get spilled. So thinking Jack was murdered from the beginning of the episode, seeing this, I'm thinking, oh, somebody nabbed him. And then right after this, nobody ever saw Jack again. No, actually not at all. There's another strange thing about that kitchen scene. So you've got the cleanser, you got the bare footprint, you got the spices, the broken plate. All of this is kind of normal. You know, nothing's really, I mean, they're spilled and they're broken. That's not, quote, normal, but I mean, things break in kitchens. So it's not that abnormal. And they're all household items. They're all things that you would expect to find in the kitchen. Spices, yeah. Being barefoot in the kitchen, that's normal. Spilled cleanser, you know, a plate. These are all kitchen things. But in the middle of this mess, in the middle of the white powder, was Jack's ceremonial West Point sword and shield. What are those doing there? I don't know what the normal place for something like that is. Maybe in a chest, or maybe hung on a wall in a case, a glass case of some sort. But certainly not in the kitchen. And certainly not in the middle of this domestic mess. What were they doing there? Were they there? Did somebody bring them there? Did Jack bring them there? Why? It's a very big question, I think. Then we have this incident across the street. There's a house that's in the middle of being constructed. And on the night of the 28th, there are smoke bombs. A couple smoke bombs go off in this construction area. Jack disappeared. And I think they say somewhere in there that the smoke bombs, they went off two nights before Jack disappeared. So I'm not thinking that this happened at the same time what happened in the kitchen. I'm thinking smoke bombs is a test of some sort. You know, they plan on taking him on the 30th. So on the 28th, they set off these smoke bombs in the house across the street, in this construction house, because they want to see how the neighbors and how the authorities are going to respond and what their response times are. And then when they see how this is going to be, then they grab him. And then this is a convenient place to take him very quickly. And when they go to, and the authorities go to investigate this scene, they find a phone. And the phone, it's Jack's phone, the phone that he takes with him everywhere. So this seemed to really play into my whole theory, except that Jack didn't disappear on the 28th. He didn't disappear on the night that these smoke bombs went off. In fact, the night that these smoke bombs go off, he sends an email to his employer saying that there's been a break-in at his house and that his phone, his badge, and his briefcase have been stolen. And this badge, what I mean by badge is, you know, like those little badges that you swipe to get into doors, not like a police badge, it's a security badge. That's the word I'm looking for. So then I'm thinking, whoa, maybe this was a distraction. You know, set the smoke bombs off over here. Everybody's looking over there. Go over here and steal Jack's stuff. But that doesn't really make sense, right? If you're going to burgle someone, you're going to break into their house and steal something. Even if you're misdirecting someone somewhere else, you don't want to do that. You don't want authorities, just because the police are across the street doesn't make it better. You don't want them there at all. So what you would want is everything to seem normal if you're going to do something like that. So that theory, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But the strange thing here is, you know, he sends this email about these things being stolen, that his house has been broken into, but he doesn't call the police ever. Not on the 28th, not on the 29th, never. The next time that anyone sees Jack, he's at the local pharmacy. Now, first thing when I'm watching this surveillance video of him at the pharmacy, right when he walks in the door, I said, he's walking weird. And it's very subtle, but he's limping. He's going down the aisle. Just watch the way he drags one foot, just a little bit. It's very subtle, but he's limping. The next time we see him after that, so I guess apparently at some point here, he gets a ride to the parking garage, where supposedly where his car is, except that he's at the wrong parking garage. And he's on surveillance video here while he's talking to the attendant. And now he is severely limping. And he has his shoe, I think it's his right shoe. He has his shoe off and he's holding his shoe in his hand. So he's walking around limping and talking and pacing. And he seems quite a bit more agitated now than he was at the pharmacy. So, I mean, it is a fair question to ask what happened in the 40 minutes between the pharmacy and the parking garage that changed his state of mind, that amplified his state of mind. I mean, he's not acting normal in the pharmacy. He's a little weird, but more like nervous, you know, like a stress, like a kind of a normal level of strangeness. But the parking garage, it's almost like panic. And some people read that as fear, you know, like he was afraid someone's going to get him. You know, you put that into the theory that he was murdered and that's what it looks like. You know, he's afraid someone's coming after him. But what I also kind of read into this is, what about a psychotic break? You know, what if he's having something psychological happen here. You know, this is not necessarily real. Whatever he's reacting to, it doesn't necessarily have to be actually happening. You know, his briefcase has been stolen. That's what he keeps saying. They took my briefcase. What if he's wrong? You know, like, what if his mind is somewhere else? One of the people that they interview in the show, one of the interviewees says that seeing the limp, they want to know what happened to Jack in those 40 minutes between the pharmacy and the parking garage. Why does he have his shoe off? But I don't think whatever has him limping and has his shoe off happened in that time. Before I even saw this footage, I saw limping in the pharmacy footage. So whatever happened to him happened before he got to the pharmacy. It seems that way. His wife also suggests that him being a manic depressive, that maybe even though he was quite diligent about taking his medication, maybe he's not on his medication. And that's quite possible. Getting into a manic state and be in a stressful situation, I could see this pacing fit that. So it makes me wonder, where is his medication? And it takes me back to the briefcase. Wherever his briefcase is it possible, as they say, he took his briefcase with him everywhere, is it possible that his medication was in that briefcase? So he hasn't taken his medication. And whatever situation that he's in or thinks he's in right now is only increasing as his manic state is increasing. So maybe that's the 40 minutes. What happens in those 40 minutes between the pharmacy and the parking garage is he's losing control of the mania. But there is an outlier in this psychotic break theory, and that's the smoke bombs. The smoke bombs don't really fit into this idea, right? Because it seems like all of this stuff, sure, okay, this was all Jack in Jack's head. But the smoke bomb was something that happened externally, something that isn't, or at least didn't seem at first, to be connected to Jack's state of mind. But then we find out that there's a possibility that that smoke bomb, those smoke bombs, they were set off by Jack himself. Because this house that's being constructed across the street, it's a project that Jack was opposed to. He felt really strongly about this house not being built there. So his wife even suggests that he could have been so upset that maybe he would have done something like set off those smoke bombs. But my question here is, why? If you don't want this house built, why set off smoke bombs? I mean, what does that accomplish? And Jack is an intelligent man. He was a soldier. He was part of multiple presidential administrations. So he's an intelligent human being. He was a lawyer. What would he think setting off smoke bombs in this partially constructed house was going to do? I mean, are we saying that he thought that setting off smoke bombs in this house, people were going to go, oh, well, you know, people set off smoke bombs here. Maybe this isn't the best place to take to build a house. Let's just take it all down and let's give up on this. No, of course not. If Jack did it, what did he think he was accomplishing? That's a very interesting question, because I can't seem to come up with a reasonable answer to that, unless the reasonable answer is he wasn't thinking that maybe this psychotic break or this manic state of mind, this happened as a consequence of that. But that would be presupposing that he's the kind of guy that just has smoke bombs chilling around his house. But now I want to go back to that kitchen scene for a moment here. The first time I saw the photo, before I saw the rest of the scene, the first time I saw that plate, before I even thought about this is when people took him, the first thing I thought was he threw that in the sink. The way that it was laying there in the photo, it didn't look like it fell or it was dropped. It looked like it was thrown, like it was put there with purpose. And we know, since he was in the parking garage and the pharmacy before that, and that he was in a taxi ride, possibly in a taxi ride, that we see him in hotel footage, that we see him getting a ride from people in the pharmacy to the parking garage, that there were many, many places Jack was seen after supposedly this mess in the kitchen happened. So this obviously wasn't when he was taken. So that means that this mess was most likely was made by Jack. Somebody proposes that maybe he went across and set off those smoke bombs. And when he got back to his house, he realized he dropped his phone. That's why his phone was over there, because he dropped it and he realized it. But now it was too late to go back and get his phone. So he gets upset. He gets upset. Maybe he's not been taking his medicine. So he gets a little more upset than he normally would, and he starts knocking spices around and throws a plate in the sink. And I'm still thinking a lot about this sword and this shield and this spilled detergent. Now, the spilled detergent could be part of a temper tantrum, but if I look at the picture correctly, the crime scene photos, the comet is spilled on top of these things, which means they were there before the comet. So the only thing I can think here is maybe it just happened to be that he was cleaning the sword and the shield. Is that possible? Do you clean a ceremonial sword and shield with comet? If that's possible, maybe he's in the middle of cleaning these things, checks for his phone. His phone's gone, realizes that it's across the street where he's set off these smoke bombs, and then he has the tantrum. He drops the comet, and then because he drops the comet, he knocks the spices over. And now he's just pissed, so he throws the plate in the sink. But then there's that one other clue, the bear footprint, right? The bear footprint. Now, I didn't rewind the episode to check this, but I'm quite positive that the bear footprint was a right footprint. And that the shoe that Jack took off was his right shoe. So let's just imagine this scenario. This tamper tantrum situation is going on. Maybe he realizes the phone is gone, but he doesn't throw a tantrum at first. He's upset. He's stressed. Maybe he decides to clean something. That's why the comet's out. Maybe it's the sword and the shield. He's doing this and he drops something. Whatever he drops, it lands on his foot. And that's what snaps him. That's what pisses him off. That's what makes him knock the spices and break the plate. He's stressed. The briefcase is, I believe the briefcase is gone. The briefcase is gone. He's not medicated. And he just loses it. And he's dropped this thing on his foot. So now he goes to the pharmacy. Maybe originally he went to the pharmacy to get medication. And maybe that's why he chose the pharmacy. I'm going to go get medication. I can't find mine. I'm going to get a new prescription. But once he gets there, he's not thinking completely clearly. Now he's thinking, I know where the briefcase is. I got to go get it. I don't need to pay for another prescription because the pills are in my briefcase. I'll just go get the briefcase. So they're in the car. I don't have a car. So maybe somebody here can give me a ride. He's limping lightly because he's just dropped this thing on his foot, but it's not bad yet. So he gets a ride, and I'm pretty sure they said it's 40 minutes. There's a 40-minute window there. So in the 40 minutes it takes for him to go from the pharmacy to the parking garage, his stress level, his state of mind are amplifying. His foot starts swelling. So he takes off his shoe because his shoe is hurting. It's pushing against this injury on his foot. And that's making his mental state even worse. So then when we see him at the parking garage, now he's frantic. He's frantic because he's at the wrong parking garage. He doesn't know he's at the wrong parking garage because the car's not there. It says he loses his car all the time. He's not thinking straight. Where is his car? So all he can talk about is his briefcase. And why did he report it stolen? I don't know. Why? In this scenario, all of this seems to make sense, right? Except he reported it stolen. He reported it stolen sometime around the time of the smoke bomb. I don't know if it was before or after, but they're about close in time. So that seems related. So you could ask the question, perhaps, when he went across the street to do this, to put the smoke bombs, is it feasible to ask, did somebody break into his house? Like, hey, the guy just left his house. He left the door unlocked. But then why go in and specifically steal a briefcase? I'm assuming this badge, this work badge, security badge, was in the briefcase. I could be wrong. But why just steal those things? Why not steal something else? So that doesn't seem like a reasonable scenario. So why is Jack worried about this briefcase at this point, right? If he's going to the parking garage because he's going to get his car, does he think the briefcase is in the car? If he thinks the briefcase is in the car, then why has he reported it stolen earlier? Because that would mean he knew where it was, unless he'd forgotten. But if he'd forgotten, why would he assume someone broke into his house and stole it? There's something going on with that email that's not making sense. Because in there, he includes his phone. His phone's been stolen too, right? But we know his phone's not stolen. We don't know his phone isn't stolen. We know where his phone is. We can make the assumption that if he set off those smoke bombs himself, that he's the one that left his phone there. But if he didn't set off those smoke bombs, then someone did steal his phone, his briefcase, and the badge, and they happened to drop the phone. I mean, if you're going to break into someone's house and steal two, maybe three things, depending if the briefcase contains the badge or not, are you really going to just accidentally drop one of those two to three things? That's a pretty clumsy thief. So what if Jack lost, he's not sure where the briefcase is. He's panicking. So what if Jack has lost the briefcase? He can't remember where it is. He thinks it's been stolen. He goes to look for his phone, not realizing that if he's the one who set off the smoke bombs, not realizing that he's left it over there. So he says, my God, the briefcase is gone and my phone is gone. And inside the briefcase is the badge. Oh, someone broke into my house. Someone took these things, right? Because now it looks like this concerted effort. This briefcase that I can't find, this phone that I can't find, something's going on here. Somebody has stolen these things. So he sends this email. And then he realizes, I know where my phone is. It must have fallen out of my pocket while I was across the street. And now, because the phone and the briefcase aren't in this situation together, he starts rethinking somebody stole the briefcase. And he starts thinking, one of two things I'm thinking if this theory is true. He's thinking it's in the car, so I have to get to the car, or I have to get to the car to get to where the briefcase is. But even that theory is offset by the fact that when he gets to the parking garage, he's still talking about somebody stealing his briefcase. So is this theory about somebody taking the briefcase, is this why he goes to Newark, 14 miles away? And if it's just that simple, why does he suddenly put on a black hoodie and put the hood over his head as he walks past cameras? Did he know those cameras were there? Or is he just putting on this hoodie so nobody sees him? And if nobody sees him, nobody recognizes him, why? Why is he hiding? Why is he hiding his identity? They make a big point of saying that a black sweatshirt is not something that Jack Wheeler was known to wear. This is a suit and tie guy. This is not a black sweatshirt guy, black hoodie. So I'm thinking about that. When I think about that ride to Newark, that's strange to me too. Why 14 miles away, right? I'm sure it's strange to everyone. Why 14 miles away? Why Newark? No one can think of any reason he would go to Newark. What I can't help but think of is a case from the original Unsolved Mysteries, the case of George Owens. George Owens was this older black man who disappeared. Essentially, he was seen in a drugstore looking for his wife, who was apparently away on a trip, or she was being released from a hospital. It's been a long time since I saw the episode. And he's saying, I can't find my wife. I can't find my wife. He's very confused. He's in like a senile state of mind. And the reason I think of this case is because one of the theories was when he's looking for his wife, he's asking for directions because he's gotten lost. He's driving around in his car and he's gotten lost. So he asks for directions to Nolensville, which is where his wife is. And I believe that's where they live as well, or where they lived as well. But the person who was working there misunderstood him, maybe because of his accent, or maybe it sounded like to her that he said Lobelville instead of Nolensville. So she gave him directions to Lobelville. So he takes off on these directions to the wrong place. How do we know that he, Jack Wheeler, heard Newark correctly when he heard that's where the taxi was going? I believe they say they don't make a big point of who's in the taxi with him, but it sounded like they said he shared a ride. Like somebody else was going to Newark and he's like, yep, that's where I'm going too. How do we know he didn't mishear that and that he was going somewhere else? I guess we don't really, but you would think that in 14 miles, he would figure out that he's not going where he wants to go. So he's in this black hoodie and he's going somewhere 14 miles away. This seems to support the theory that he's running from something, right? He's hiding. He wants to get far away. So he thinks somebody's chasing him. Is somebody chasing him? Don't know. So he is found in the landfill and they track the landfill back to Newark and then they can track down the truck and then they check the dumpsters that this truck empties and they swab and they find one that has a partial DNA match to him, to his blood, which means that they believe he was in this dumpster, which is how he ended up at the landfill. Now, someone mentions that sometimes homeless people climb inside these dumpsters because they have these side doors. In the winter, they climb in for warmth. So someone suggests maybe he climbed in there and fell asleep and didn't wake up when the dumpster came. And then, you know, they flipped it over and crushed him. But it doesn't really match his injuries. So that's not really a great theory. His injuries are far more extensive. He had been beaten terribly. So someone suggests maybe he was mugged. But I mean, a mugger might crack you over the head and rob you, but they're certainly not going to beat you extensively. Why would they waste that time, and why would they risk being seen beating you? Not only that, Jack still had money on him. Not a very good mugger. And we know he didn't have a phone or a briefcase on him, so there wasn't anything else really to take. Not to mention the fact that if you're a mugger, someone says in the episode that muggers leave people where they lie. You know, if they knock someone down and rob them, they leave them there. They don't pick them up and transport them somewhere else, stuff them inside of a dumpster. So let's say that he was being chased and he was murdered. Why wait until he's in a taxi, until he gets out of a taxi 14 miles away from home? Why wait till then to do it? Why not when he was home? Why not when he was home alone, spilling things in the kitchen? Why not grab him off the street before he went into the pharmacy? Why not take him from the parking garage, assuming that you're following him around? There are so many better places, but you wait till he's 14 miles away from home. You follow him 14 miles, beat him to death, and then throw him in a dumpster. It's strange. All those things, you can stitch together a reasonable sequence of events. But there's one outlier. I thought that the smoke bombs were an outlier earlier. They turned out that they could possibly be explained if Jack did them. But this one is the true outlier. This is the one that doesn't fit into anything. Where's the briefcase? They haven't found it. Where is it? Did someone actually steal it? Did someone actually take it? As he reported in that email, as he said when he was in the parking garage talking to the attendant. And if they did, why? I mean, there's a lot of things, obviously, that this episode doesn't answer or maybe can't answer, but if this briefcase is taken and it has this badge for his work, did anything happen at his work afterwards? You know, assuming you went through all this stuff to kill Jack Wheeler so that you could get this briefcase, was anything done with it? Another thing I would like to know is, in all the injuries on his body, what was up with his foot? Was it broken? And if it was broken, how was it broken? Was it broken in a way where someone smashed it? Or was it broken in a way that you can tell that something fell, that he dropped something on his foot? Do we know if his medication was in the house? Do we know if he carried his medication in his briefcase? Do we know from toxicology whether he had been taking his medication? Do we know that Jack Wheeler ever owned smoke bombs? Do we know that Jack Wheeler left fingerprints on smoke bombs? And lastly, do we know why, other than my very strenuous theory that he was cleaning the sword and shield, why those objects would be in the kitchen? No theory seems to fit in a way that covers the majority of the questions. So if you have any information that can help to resolve the case of Jack Wheeler, please contact authorities directly. And if you want to remain anonymous, you can call Delaware Crime Stoppers at 1-800-TIP-3333, or you can go to DelawareCrimeStoppers.com. Do not send any of the tips my way. I'm just a podcaster. I'm not affiliated with law enforcement in any way. However, if you do want to discuss the cases with other listeners, you can go to FurtherQSTPod on Instagram and Twitter. And also, if you would like to help support my research, you can use the link in the description of this episode and buy me a coffee. And now, before we end this, I'd like to bend your ears just briefly to talk about the direction of this podcast. So I mentioned earlier that I didn't do the episode about the Long Island serial killer. I may do that at a later point. But this, what you're listening to now, is a direction I'm going to lean into a little bit. I've been talking a lot about doing research, and when I feel that the research is done to release information about a case, What I'm finding about this way of operating is that my perfectionism is getting in the way of me ever releasing episodes. So I'm going to try to start focusing episodes on questions and on more informal conversation like this. And I'm not sure how that's going to work into the case that I've been researching, if I'm going to do that all in one big episode or if I'm going to break it into multiple pieces. But I think understanding that the show maybe can live up to the name a little more and focus on the questions in cases, I think that's going to free me from that perfectionism. Because what's really been preventing me from releasing the first episode or the first case, I'm going to go back and turn all these bonus episodes into actual numbered episodes. But what's been preventing me is that I don't feel like I fully understand the case. But I think that's where I should be coming from. Because if I had the answers to the case, why make a podcast? Just become an investigator, right? If I'm that good. It's not really what I was trying to go for, but I think somewhere in my head that all got mixed together. There are big questions in the case that I've been looking at, and I've been trying to resolve them. I've read so many newspapers, and I can't seem to resolve it. So I think I'm just going to have to present both possibilities, which is more interesting now that I think about it. So if I enjoy the other 5 episodes on Unsolved Mysteries, maybe I'll do more episodes on those. And anytime I watch or listen to something true crime that I think that I can do here in this kind of format, I'm going to do that. It's going to be evolving. We're going to go through this together. I'm going to break through the perfectionism by moving forward and accepting imperfection. And I'm going to announce now 2 things. Number 1, as I research things, I may be tweeting about them before I produce episodes, because this gives people an opportunity to throw information at me that I am not aware of, for people to be involved in the process of the research. So make sure that you are following Further QST Pod on Twitter for when those things happen. And the second thing I'm going to announce is what this case that I've been researching for the longest time is, and what we will soon be talking about: the disappearance of 9-year-old Aisha Degree.